the target or the goal to these Sioux is actually to just pay attention to what the U.S. manufacturers are doing, and not only the responsibility of the U.S. government in all the violence currently happening in Mexico, but also to bring light to the responsibility on private companies on this issue. Documents and investigations that I've seen show that 80% of the guns traced back to the U.S. are coming from shops in Arizona, which is a major corridor for most of the top cartels in Mexico, like the Sinaloa cartel and the Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generacion. And
we have to leave it there, Luis, but we're going to continue our conversation in a post show. Also, you followed a bus from El Paso of migrants sent to New York. We want to talk about that, and we'll do an interview in Spanish, and we will post it online. By the way, on our website, you can also see our headlines, read them, and listen to them in Spanish at democracynow.org. Luis Chaparro, we want to thank you so much for your participation. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Slick, you investors in hate, you Saddams and you Bushes, you Bin Ladens and snakes, you billionaire bullies, you're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse. And that's how it's done. War after war, you old feudal parasites, you just sacrifice the poor. You got the cutting edge weapons, but your scam's still the same as it's been since the Romans. Yo, it's the Patriot game. Yo, that's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. You twisters of language, you creeps of disguise. Yeah, disinformation. It's like worms in your eyes. You privileged bankers, you gambler thieves, you profit on war. You think it's just less money in peace. So that's how it's done. Time after time, country after country, and crime after crime. You pretend it's religion, like there's no one to blame for the dead and impoverished in your little patriot game. Honey, that's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. You got the world's greatest power, and you team up with thugs, make a fortune on weapons, destruction and drugs. But your flags and boots and uniforms, they start to all smell the same when all sides are killing in the patriot game. And that's how it's done. And you've got our sons in the crosshairs of horror at the end of your guns. And your national anthems, they start to all smell like shame when all sides are dying in the patriot game. It's just a war racket. That's just a war racket. It's just a war racket. And that's a war racket. And war is never, ever holy. It's just a greedy man's dream. And you two-faced crusaders, both sides are obscene. War is not made by God. War is just made by men who misdirect our attention while you thieves do your thing. And that's how it's done. about every 30 years. The rich fill their coffers, the poor fill with tears. The young fill the coffins, the old hang a wreath. The politicians get photographed, but their names underneath. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. That's the war racket. It's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket.
All right, then. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I am your host, Paul Rowland. I thought it'd be good to hear the full version of that song that I've been using as my occasional, sometimes regular theme song for this program. That's, of course, Buffy St. Marie. I was really glad to hear that on Democracy Now! On Monday, just 2 days ago, as a as her music to accompany her piece with Buffy St. Marie, who did a short pre-recorded interview. Really good to hear Buffy St. Marie on the airwaves of Democracy Now! Also heard her later on a Teokasin Ghost Horse show here on cable. It airs every Monday at 11 a.m., 11 to noon. It was also good to hear Keala Kelly, who I had on many years ago during the ongoing anti-telescope struggle on the sacred mountain of the Hawaiian people. She'd guest hosted. Anyway, yes, always good to hear Buffy St. Marie. And telling it like it is on this day, Decolonization Day, October 12th. 530 years ago, you know what happened. Christopher Columbus washed upon the shores of a Caribbean island. I can't believe I'm blanking on it right now. Which one? Anyway, so that's neither here nor there, and the rest is history, as they say. He and his crew ended up badly mistreating the indigenous peoples. He came back several times, was it three voyages, and ended up bringing back slaves to, it was the Taino people on, not Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Anyway, okay, it's not important. Someone will call in with that important piece of information. And yes, he ended up, cutting off the hands of people if they didn't bring him enough loot. It all started there, the colonization of the Western Hemisphere. That's why indigenous people of the Western Hemisphere, in general, the large majority do not see him as a heroic figure. In fact, see him as a historical villain. And especially with the Black Lives Movement and the sort of renewed energy on looking at historical figures, the public recognition of historical figures with monuments and such, and the tearing down of, or the request to take down statues of Confederate generals, et cetera, sort of spilled over into the a relook at Columbus statues all over, and the various things named for Columbus. And, it just became a worldwide, effort to correct the historical record in the lens of justice and equality and recognition of how colonialism and slavery set the stage for the modern world and the injustices and the inequities that we continue with are here because of that vast historical process which we are all enmeshed in. So I want to talk about that today. I want to continue on the discussion that Amy and Juan started with Medea Benjamin and her co-author of her new book. And I want to talk about, anyway, she's going to be in Portland. I just want to get a couple announcements out right away. She's going to actually be here in a month, on November 16th, at the First Unitarian Church, sponsored by their Peace Action Group. And so you'll get a chance to hear her directly. And I am talking to her people about getting her on the air. I don't think we'll be able to have her on live that day. That's actually a Wednesday, because like apparently she'll be flying down from Seattle. But I will try to make an exception and have a pre-recorded interview with her to air. So that's one thing. Another thing is coming up this Sunday, October 16th, there's going to be a rally to say no to U.S. wars. And I believe they're including the Ukraine conflict, the war in Ukraine, in that category. As you heard quite explicitly, the U.S. has had, well, the U.S. and its NATO allies have had the possibility of not just of encouraging, and not just encouraging, but allowing peace negotiations to take process, and led by Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of the UK, those attempts were torpedoed. And that was early on in the war, before, I believe, Russia had actually conquered all the areas that they conquered in the eastern part of Ukraine. And, you know, anyway, so that's going to be this Sunday, October 16th at 12 noon. That's going to be at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue. Say no to U.S. wars. So I'll say it now, and hopefully some of you want to talk about this. It just looks like there's no way we're going to save ourselves unless we get active. I know it's hard, and I know you know, a lot of people are in various places where they may not be able to. I know we're still in pandemic fatigue. I know the weight of what's going on in the world is heavy and hard to bear. And, you know, in our own personal lives, a lot of us have a lot of challenges that may make it difficult to activate ourselves beyond the struggle for survival, which we are all engaged in. So, but both climate change and militarism, which I've been talking as a twinned pair, that they're inextricably linked, that neither of those will have any chance of getting better without people getting active. And what form will that look like? Okay, so those are sort of the framework I wanted to set out, but I wanted to talk about you know, the issue of decolonization to start out with, and then morph into how the you know, U.S. imperial power is continuing to distort any attempts to solve the world's problems, and how that's playing out in the Ukraine, and how we, in the belly of the beast, have a greater share of responsibility, hard as that might be for people to want to shoulder. But so to, you know, the whole process of looking at the past, but actually changing the present by understanding the past, and the issue of the fundamental starting point of the colonization of the Americas for the subsequent 500 years that have played out. Militarization, economic expansion, the development of capitalism, just war after war after war, as Buffy St. Marie said. Of course, there have been wars and wars and wars, but it's all been accelerated as the turn to the use of fossil fuels and the massive industrial expansion from the Industrial Revolution, the massive expansion of the power of weaponry and the ability to produce weaponry, the ability to produce all kinds of things that now have proven in retrospect to be very dangerous to life on the planet because of the cumulative effect of all these industrial processes in releasing so many greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, which we didn't know about, but we've known about for 100 years now, and we know more and more about, and it's not looking good. So I've been talking about the need to demilitarize the planet, and this issue of the Ukraine war is a perfect lens through which to view the everything that I've been talking about, which is that militarism has to go. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit again, as I said, about I actually had reached out a little too late to a group called the Red Nation, which is a relatively new group, because I noticed a blog. I was interested in having someone, an indigenous person from this land, to talk about the issue of current U.S. imperialism. And I'd come across a blog that the Red Nation does, and which is, I'll just read their mission statement. The Red Nation is dedicated to the liberation of Native peoples from capitalism and colonialism. We center Native political agendas and struggles through direct action, advocacy, mobilization, and education. We are a coalition of Native and non-Native activists, educators, students, and community organizers advocating Native liberation. We formed to address the marginalization and invisibility of Native struggles within mainstream social justice organizing and to foreground the targeted destruction and violence towards Native life and land. And their areas of struggle are indigeneity, liberation, resistance, and coalition. And then they have a whole list of principles of unity, which I won't read, but you can go to their site, theRedNation.org. As I said, I would have liked to have had a voice from that organization talking about them rather than me, a Euro-American, talking about them. But that's just the way it is today. So I want to read this blog because I think it's really important, written by Justine Teba, T-E-B-A, and maybe I'll be able to have her on at some point because it kind of ties together all the subjects that I want to talk about. NATO is a relic of the Cold War. It was initially formed as an alliance of anti-communist countries. NATO has actively undermined the sovereignty of many nations looking to de-link themselves from global capitalism and imperialism through military force and invasion. The U.S. and NATO have been inserting themselves into Ukrainian affairs for decades. One recent declassified CIA document dated July 13, 1953, described Project Aerodynamic, stating, quote, "The purpose of Project Aerodynamic is to provide for the exploitation and expansion of the anti-Soviet Ukrainian resistance for Cold War and hot war purposes." End quote. Project Aerodynamic funded and provided equipment to multiple organizations who sympathized with the Ukrainian Nazi leader Stepan Bandera. Today, Bandera sympathizers sit in political office at all levels of government throughout Ukraine. After the fall of the Soviet Union, NATO encouraged former Soviet territories to join them and created division amongst those who still believed their quality of life was better with ties to Russia and those interested in joining NATO. This resulted in civil wars throughout the region, specifically in the Donbass region, a region in East Ukraine that rejected the government installed by a U.S. coup in 2014. This coup would lead to the resurfacing of many far-right militias openly holding neo-Nazi values, such as the Azov Brigade, who is the primary militia fighting in the civil war against partisans in the Donbass region, and all who oppose the puppet government. The Ukrainian government and this was written March 9, 2022. The Ukrainian government has since formally incorporated such militias into its military. Looks like somebody's already calling me, but if you could hold off, I just want to continue this introduction. Presently, U.S. media is doing a great job of manufacturing consent. U.S. propaganda is extremely effective at shifting public opinion to favor going to war by purposely misleading and deceiving the public. In the case of Ukraine, U.S. media is overlooking the far right and blatant neo-Nazi tendencies of popular movements that the U.S. installed government has allowed to flourish. A U.S. war with Russia will not benefit the masses of innocent Ukrainian people who will suffer in wartime. U.S. and NATO are instigating a war that ultimately only benefits those who financially invest in war and will expand the reach of NATO's imperialist projects. And it continues. I'll just read the final two paragraphs. Once again, the U.S. proposes a war for profit. Rising defense stocks have the richest investors eager to promote yet another brutal war. This comes back home in the form of predatory military recruitment practices, which have always disproportionately targeted Native youth. Today, Native people remain overrepresented in the U.S. military while remaining one of the smallest populations. When indigenous people are the first to go to war for imperialist powers, we must demand an end to imperial expansion everywhere. We invite anti-war and anti-imperialist coalitions to form and join upcoming calls for international action. We say no war, no sanctions, no enlistment and recruitment, U.S. out of everywhere, dismantle NATO. These are our demands. It's not enough to be anti-war. We must also be anti-imperialist. Again, that was Justine Tiba from the group The Red Nation. And I thought I had something quickly about her, but I can't find it right now. But you can go again to the website, The Red Nation. Okay, so just really quickly, I know people want to jump in on this. I just want to, just because this, you know, this is October 12th. This is the 530th anniversary of the beginning of the colonization of the Americas. There's a book called Behind the Trail of Broken Treaties and Indian Declaration of Independence by Vine Deloria. And there's an appendix which talks about the international arena. And I think that's something that people, you know, maybe once upon a time people knew more about it. But out of the Native American activism, the Red Power movement, which had many arms, which had many manifestations, one of which was the American India movement, and with its, you know, the occupation of the of Wounded Knee and other occupations. You know, before that, there was actually the Alcatraz, which AIM was, some AIM people were a part of, but it wasn't specifically American Indian movement. That was 1969. But anyway, they quickly realized that it was, the problem was the colonial relationship of the United States to its indigenous peoples. And so they went out into, you know, to actually to the United Nations, and they formed the International Indian Treaty Council, which in 1977 received consultative non-governmental organization status as an observer at the United Nations, and used this status as a means of getting American Indians included in the NGO Conference on Discrimination held at the in Geneva in September of that year. And 100 Native Americans were there present and had a very important role in which led to the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which finally passed a handful of years ago, probably 10 or more now, but and it took a while for the U.S. to sign it. And it doesn't have the strongest language. It certainly doesn't talk about decolonization of the lands. And anyway, so he goes on. Again, this is a really important, very important author. He really, really laid a lot of the groundwork for a lot of the work that's been academic and activist work that's been done since. So indigenous peoples, this was as a result of this process, they, you know, they gained status you know, much of the discussion of Geneva concerned political recognition and protection of indigenous populations, the moral basis for proposing such fundamental changes. They basically wanted, you know, recognition, civil and human rights, and, you know, some of them wanted further, more of a call for decolonization. But as I'm going to read here in a little bit, that wasn't going to happen. But they were, you know, finally part of some of the, you know, sort of outsider status, but part of the, you know, the one world body that had to do with, you know, recognizing nations. And since they saw themselves as nations, they thought they should be part of that. So indigenous peoples are finally a part of the world agenda, albeit only as a moral force after the Geneva Conference. This is back in 1977. Although they had been the objects of international concern before Geneva, they had not been allowed to make their own presentations about those things that concern them. Other people spoke for them, which you could say I am doing now, which is true. Anyway, cut forward, I just want to read what I thought was some of the relevant part of what I'm talking about. There was a larger problem. This is, again, from Behind the Trail of Broken Treaties. There was a larger problem within the United Nations that seemed incapable of resolution. The United Nations was founded at the height of power of the nation state, right after the war, and it had been sustained by the unparalleled development of industrial activity experienced by the Western nations. In Article 2, Paragraph 7 of the UN Charter, the founding nations carefully protected themselves against independence movements by indigenous minorities. The paragraph reads, quote, "Nothing in the present charter shall authorize the United Nations to intervene in matters which are essentially within the domestic jurisdiction of any state or require the members to submit such matters to settlement under the present charter." And he may not get to this while I'm reading here in the part that I'm reading, but so it's very convenient that the Supreme Court ruling had declared the indigenous nations as domestic dependent nations in a very distorted legal logic back in the early 19th century. So I continue. "Hence, all a nation had to do to prevent inquiry into the conditions of its indigenous peoples was to declare them a matter of internal jurisdiction. This escape clause served the Russians as well as it did the countries of the Russians as well as it did the countries of the Western Hemisphere, and the chances of having it," which is interesting given the current war, "and the chances of having it amended, revoked, or overridden were non-existent. The decolonization process, which followed the Second World War, did not deal with indigenous groups that were geographically contained or contiguous to larger nations. In every instance where a people received political independence, their lands were not geographically part of the larger nation from which they received their independence. Therefore, if the native peoples of the Americas wished to achieve complete independence from the countries in which they were located, they were seeking the kind of political miracle which history has not yet experienced. It seemed likely, however, that the indigenous peoples wished simply to create quasi-independent enclaves in which they would have a maximum of social and domestic freedom without surrendering the military protection against invasion which the larger nations offered. The problem, as they saw it, was to stop the military invasions by the nations which alleged to be protecting them." Very interesting statement there, very prophetic. "The international arena was very fruitful in many ways for American Indian tribes. Visits to Geneva to make presentations about the action of the United States toward them were of inestimable value in bolstering their morale. The United States response was puzzling," and goes on. I think this was actually written before the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was finally approved, again, much weakened down by heavy, heavy, heavy lobbying by the colonial countries, United States, Australia, etc. So yeah, again, that's from Behind the Trail of Broken Treaties and Indian Declaration of Independence by Vine Deloria. Let me see what year it was published. 1985. So that's just a little bit of backdrop here on a Decolonization Day. When, you know, people talk about decolonization in a lot of different ways now. I think a lot of people, it's become almost a sort of a psychological thing that we, you know, subjectively free ourselves ourselves. You know, again, there I go. I mean, and it's true. A lot of non-Indigenous peoples start taking on this language, which is problematic. So if you're having an issue with me talking about this stuff, please call up at 503-231-8187. I would like to hear the voices of Indigenous peoples today, people on this program, to hear what you have to say about this. But specifically, I do want to again talk about how all this relates to world events today. You know, it's a fact for anybody who's hung out with Native Americans that there is a large amount of respect paid to Native veterans. At the powwows, the grand entry will, as far as I know, always be led by veterans. Holding the Eagle Staff, holding the American flag. And, you know, it harks back to the importance that, you know, warriors played in traditional society, which is, again, a very complicated issue that it would take too long to get into, the whole issue of warfare between Indigenous peoples, the nature of Indigenous warfare, compared to colonial warfare, how colonization completely changed the nature of warfare, how exacerbated whatever tensions there were between Indigenous nations or tribes. And it's a big thing that people should think about, because it's important, and there's a lot of confusion about that issue. But yeah, so, you know, sometimes it might even be difficult for Native people to speak out on these issues. There might be a certain hesitancy. People have been colonized for so long. Anyway, you know, I have no right to talk about this stuff any further, so it would be interesting to hear what people have to say. But I want to take off on this. Looks like we might already have a caller. I want to focus on this issue, if we can, specifically of the continued U.S. imperialism is an extension of what was the imperialism of the original colonization and the expansion across the country, across the continent, to where we are here in Oregon, where I am anyway. You may not be listening to this, and how that seizure of vast amounts of incredible wealth of natural resources led to the emergence of the United States as a power, an imperial power, and here we are. Okay, so I've said my piece. Let's see who's on the air. Dennis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Quick comment on Decolonization Day. The culture is so saturated with both the colonization since Columbus and the slave trade and all that, it's really hard to purge everything. The changing of racist mascots in sports teams is one thing. I have a pet peeve about here in Oregon and the Northwest having to call the most important icon in our geography the Columbia River. And I wonder what alternative there might be to that.
The name that I'm sure it has many different names because it flows through many different tribal territories. The name that I always heard was, and I can't pronounce it properly, but Nchiwana, which is the Sahaptin for the big river. And it's actually been somewhat surprising to me the number of changes of place names, both. Mainly, I think on public land, and I don't have it at the tip of my tongue right now. But there, you know, it's part of this general cultural shift that I was talking about earlier, which is the taking down of prominent public statues and, you know, names of sport, as you say, names of sports teams, etc. That has been going on for because of pressure from Indigenous people and African Americans regarding, you know, the Confederate figures. So there actually has been a shift to bringing back the original indigenous names, like Denali Mountain. I even forget what the name for Denali was up in Alaska. That's right. There you go. That was formally changed. So yeah, I mean, these are important. You know, they're important signals that, you know. Anyway, so yeah, I agree on that. So let's start a movement.
Yeah. The other thing is, I just noticed that today is the 60th anniversary of the Columbus Day storm.
Interesting.
I had just moved to the Southern Oregon coast. I was 16 years old and in high school at Gold Beach, and which was a central landing point for that storm, and it was quite dramatic. Welcome to Oregon.
All right. Well, thanks for those historical reminders, and yeah, the whole. Okay, well, thanks, Dennis. If you want to call in, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. For some reason, my Wednesday Talk Radio Facebook page has morphed on me, and because of my technical ineptness, I'm not able to actually get the messenger, which I use to communicate with my board operator, Ty. So if I don't actually hear your name, maybe you could just say it. When I get you on the line, looks like we do have another caller. It's Greg. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Hey, I wanted to congratulate you on getting Chris Hedges and the, who was the guy from intelligence officers for Saturday? I can't remember. McGovern.
Yeah.
Yes. That was very good.
Thank you.
Although nobody's talking about the naval base still. So I wanted to comment.
What naval base?
The naval base on the peninsula, on the Crimean Peninsula.
Okay.
Putin has his land corridor right now. This is what he's after, and then we blow up the damn bridge. It's just incomprehensible. So I just wanted to comment a little bit on Medea and her, the person she had on with her on Democracy Now. They don't want to say that we're running the place there. You know, it's not the Ukrainians making these decisions. It's our decisions to make because we're running the place. We're trying to, as Chomsky has said on cable here recently, trying to seriously destabilize and bring down Russia. So you had Robbie on last week talking about the pipeline. So, like Robbie said, these exercises going on in the Baltic Sea. We are the only ships around. We definitely blew it up. So this cannot make Germany happy. So where we blew it up was in Swedish territorial waters, and they were doing an investigation. I don't think they liked what they found. Remember, they're trying to get into NATO. So they turned it over to Germany. I just saw this, heard nothing about it. I just saw it like on the ticker. And, unlike BBC or DW News, which comes out over the air on OPB. But we definitely blew this thing up. So, we're trying to get Germany to build liquid natural gas terminals. We're seriously trying to drag them into this war. Now, hopefully they're going to say, hey, they're going to be public about their findings, because it's pretty obvious that we blew up that pipeline.
So, I'm not willing to say that yet, because I don't have, conclusive evidence, but I'm certainly willing to entertain the possibility. It wouldn't be the first time that the United States has done something
as opposed to the believing that the Russians blew it up themselves. Which is the more likely possibility?
Fair enough. Okay,
so I'm really disappointed in general. Paul, you're old enough to remember when we invaded Iraq. There was huge demonstrations before we did this. Why is it that this time the left can't seem to perceive what's happening?
Well, it's partly because the U.S. itself, formally didn't invade, and there's All sorts of reasons, you know. As I said, I think the pandemic plays into it for sure. I think, you know, I think people are just kind of, I hate to use this term because it has origins in war, but kind of, you know, shell-shocked by a lot of stuff.
I knew what you were going to say there. Yes, the problem is that they're doing this in Europe, and they did this whole thing before the war started. They were just begging for Putin to invade when he had the 100,000 troops above the border. And then when he actually did it, then we had this 2 or 3 week run with all these blonde, blue-eyed refugees, worthy victims. This is Chomsky again. And this seems to have gotten this hold on everybody where nobody can understand what happened. You know, to be able to completely erase from history what we did in 2014 when we took over the country is quite a feat. And it's very disappointing that lefties like, say, Medea Benjamin can't seem to talk truth. So we're running
the place. What do you mean she didn't talk truth?
Well, she didn't want to say that we're running the place, which is very, very obvious.
Well, maybe she didn't get asked that question. I would say, you know. Anyway, I don't know. I think
they're not going to say things that are against the corporate media's line.
Oh, I don't know if I want to go that far, but you know, when she comes to town, you should challenge her on that, and I'll think about asking her that question if I get her on. But I think what we need to do now, you know, is not just all, you know, why can't we all just get along, but we need to forge some kind of, you know, have some basic principles of agreement, you know, basic points of agreement between the you know, the beleaguered forces of, you know, for peace and justice that are out here, and, you know, maybe not lead off with, you know, such forceful criticisms. I think we need to build something, and then we can hopefully hash things out. But the problem is we generally don't hash these things out, which is another subject I want to get on my high horse about, which is, you know, just the general lack of kind of self-reflection and on the left, you know, which I guess you're kind of pointing to. But anyway, I want to give other people a chance to talk, give you one last word here.
Well, I just wanted to mention, you know, blowing up the bridge. So nobody knows how we blew it up. I didn't even know the bridge existed.
Actually, I didn't either, which is kind of shocking since we should know.
We don't get any of this basic information. They're still not mentioning the naval base. So I can remember looking at the map, because again, lack of information. Looked at the map and said, this is very, very close. I was thinking, gosh, they could build a bridge across there. Well, he just finished it in 2019. He also built a pipeline underneath the Black Sea to Turkey. And finished. He also built that Nord Stream 2, which is still intact, I believe, but we haven't allowed it to, be operational yet. So Germany is really squirming. They do not like being put in this position. Shouldn't this be obvious?
Okay.
But you know, again, like I mentioned before, he has his land corridor to the Crimea, so he can get a land supply line going to the peninsula where that all-important warm water naval base called Sevastopol is. He is not going to give that up. And yes, we need to negotiate. We're running a proxy war here, and we're apparently, as Chomsky says, willing to fight Russia to the very last Ukrainian.
Well, it does seem like...
We understand it's a proxy war. If we think that Putin is insane for sending missiles after we blow up the bridge... you understand what I mean? I can't see any serious opposition coming when people can't understand it's a proxy war, that we're running the place.
Okay, well, we got other callers, so thank you for that. And yeah, I mean, that's the watchword is negotiation, and that's what doesn't seem to want to take place. And you know, we seem to be, you know, the idea of brinksmanship in a time of. Climate change, for one thing, devastating climate change, which is hitting us so fast and hard, we don't know what's hitting us. And that's what we need to be focusing our energy on, instead of these wars, which could be resolved. So yeah, peace negotiating, which is what Medea Benjamin and her co-author were talking about. Sorry, I don't actually have his name. And again, this Sunday, October 16th at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue, sponsored by the Wounded Warrior Project, the International League of People's Struggles and Resist U.S.-Led War. That's coming up this Sunday, October 16th. This is one opportunity. If there's going to be a grander coalition, maybe this will help spark it. There isn't yet. There aren't many public voices. This is going to be one opportunity to speak out. So anyway, that's this Sunday, October 16th at noon at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue. Say no to U.S. wars. With that, let's see who we got up next. Mark, you're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. I entirely agree with the last person emphasizing proxy wars, and the fronts have hardened. Yesterday was a terrible day in that Russia attacked the capital, Kiev, and about 14 other cities in the Ukraine. These are missile attacks, devastating attacks, and I was just so depressed to see the black smoke from Kiev. Now, this was supposedly, allegedly, a response to the Ukraine terrorism in attacking the pipeline, the Nord Stream. It now has three ruptures, and partially blowing up the bridge to Crimea, the only bridge. And these are very kind of important events. You raise the question whether Putin is being pushed to the very edge. Zelensky has responsibility, for not doing that, for finding a way out for Putin. I'm wondering if you have comments on this, if you have learned anything about who could have caused the Nord Stream attacks.
Well, did you hear the previous caller?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I also emailed you with four articles on the pipeline, on the attacks on the pipeline. And the German writers seem to think it was either Ukraine or the United States.
Okay.
It was state terrorism. It had to be state terrorism because the pipeline is 40 meters under the water in the Baltic. Okay?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I'm not as diligent as some of you all are. I haven't actually been following it that closely. I know I should. So all I can do is take what my listeners, including you and the previous one, have been saying about it. And it wouldn't be the first time that the U.S. is engaged. I think remember the Maine, I think that was blown up in the harbor of Cuba, I believe, that led to the Spanish-American War, and there was very somewhat suspicious. There's been numerous occasions where the U.S. has engaged in deliberate provocative sabotage. So yeah, I certainly wouldn't put it past it. I mean, I don't have the, quote, smoking gun. Nobody does. I mean, would that Julian Assange was free and able to, lead the charge with Wikipedia. We need them desperately in these times. And so, yeah, again, the U.S. imperial reach, preventing, wanting to extradite Julian Assange, who, was probably the person with the single most responsibility for actually shedding light on these hidden chapters of the empire, including in Iraq and Afghanistan, et cetera. And so, yeah.
How can we be so obsessed with the profit from natural gas to Russia? It's just amazing to me. The U.S.-Cuban conflict ended in 13 days, and here we have Ukraine is an 8-month war. I wish we had a United Nations that could eliminate.
Well, of course,
we've
got the Security Council, which, whenever there's an issue that goes against the interests of the
right,
the people on the Security Council, they're able to veto it. And certainly the United States in the forefront, but also China and Russia on, human rights issues and et cetera.
But Russia, the nation doesn't want to be excluded from the UN. I know it's a preposterous idea, but what can pressure Putin to change his course.
Well, I don't know. I just want to get back to, you know, us, our responsibility here in the heart of the empire is about all I can point
right.
to, and the need for people getting active, even though, you know, we may still be a little, you know, under the pandemic influence, and we may, and it's true, but I think it's safe to get outside and congregate, you know, with some safe precautions. And it's safe to, you know, I went to an event the U.S.-led war group had talking about these issues last week. So people are starting to, you know, some people are starting to reactivate, realizing the urgency of the situation. And, you know, it's safe with precautions, you know, including, you know, mask wearing and et cetera, and social distancing. But it's the urgency has never been greater, you know. And so
opposing the official narrative and trying to be open, trying to be critical, and trying to encourage discussion and knowledge, you know.
There you go. Well, thank you for your input, as always.
Okay, thank you.
This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. On October 12th, Colonization/Decolonization Day. Of course, the official one is always on the Monday before or after. And so we, you know, it's a big subject, you know, decolonization. I should have, you know, can't combine that really with talking about the current U.S. imperialism, which flows from the whole colonial process, which I outlined very hastily. It looks like we have another caller. We've got 10 minutes left at 503-231-8187. Don't let me flounder here. Looks like we got Willow on the phone. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello. Who are you?
Did you say Camilo?
Oh, Camilo. That's you.
I'm going to turn my radios up. Okay. I called earlier to say that the island that Columbus landed on was Hispaniola, which is now Haiti and the Mediterranean.
Oh, my memory isn't as faulty as I thought. Okay, thank you for that. Hispaniola, yes. Well, appropriately named since the Hispanics. He wasn't himself Spanish, but his expedition was underwritten by the Spanish crown. Anyway, thank you for that.
I simply wanted to say, and this is really within reference to Anti-Colonialism Day, and I hope that we can really retain our focus on that. I know that the war in Ukraine is immediate, but as you pointed out, that it all had a start 500 years ago with colonialism. And I just want to say, you kind of asked us to focus on American imperialism and colonialism, but I think we have to acknowledge that it really began with Spain, Portugal, Britain, Great Britain, and the Dutch, the Netherlands. And there's an excellent interview with Amitav Ghosh on Emergence Magazine, August 31st, 2022, named Beings Seen and Unseen, and I recommend this interview for its really insightful analysis, and it is a discussion of the Nutmeg's Curse, which is an example, probably one of the first examples of colonialist capitalist overtaking indigenous rights, property, and well-being.
You're originally from one of those Caribbean islands, aren't you?
My family is from Trinidad and Tobago. I was born in New York.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, I couldn't remember specifically your specific biographical facts, but yeah, Trinidad and Tobago. So you have that, you know, that sense, which, you know, us Euro-Americans have a really difficult time of gaining, unless we've, you know, really hung out with people who have that sense, you know, but you must have that sense from your family of I don't know.
That's a good observation, because my father, who was a physician and very bright, very well educated, began his education in Trinidad at Queen's Royal College, where he was taught by, what's the name of that black communist who wrote Black Jacobin?
Fanon?
No, not Fanon. Oh, no. He's from one of the French All islands. Right.
I know who you mean. But anyway, go on.
Okay. So I mean, what I can say about my father, he was definitely a bourgeois, but also radical in terms of his rights, you know, basic civil rights and anti-discrimination orientation, and he supported a lot of causes for that. But he voted for Eisenhower in 1952.
The contradictions were all in mention. Hey, listen, yeah. We've got two more callers. Maybe wrap it up.
Okay. Very, very good program today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to be so short, but when a bunch of people call in at the very end. Okay.
That's all I had to say.
Okay, thanks, Camilo. Okay, who's up next? Garth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Barth. Hello. A couple of things. If the pipeline is 40 meters under, then that means professional divers or professional equipment. If there are three different explosions, that means it's certainly an organized attack with possibly many players. And there are any number of groups that would like to screw with the Russians, but we're certainly toward the top of the list. This could be military, it could be black ops, it could be a lot of different things, and it could be some player. I'm not prepared like you to say, you know, this is us and we did it and it's military, because we don't have enough information yet, but I'd love it if that information would come out. And also, just in terms of colonial activities, you know, the Russians are basically doing that by extension right now. They're trying to reclaim territory from somebody else. They're trying to impose their doctrine and their management style, if you will, on people that have their own life and their own country. So I think that that's, by extension, kind of colonialist. And I'll just leave it at that. Thanks for your day.
Well, thank you. I have to reiterate continually that I have no love for any big nation state, frankly. I think there's the nation state, as constituted, it basically they're all have colonial aspects, because they're all an amalgamation of all kinds of populations, and they all have their own dirty history, you know, of mistreating those their indigenous populations. And look at the consolidation of the nation states at the very beginning, arising out of the whole colonial process. You know, 1492, the Spanish also expelled their Jewish population, and that led to the massive, you know, diaspora, where, you know, a lot of the Jews who live in the area of Ukraine and such, you know, originally came from there. It's a bad history, but the overarching processes of imperial expansionism, centralized control, militarism are the basic dynamics, and you know, we have to rein those under control, as impossible as it may seem, because we've got no other planet to go to. It's reached a absolute crisis point. And if people, we got to realize that, and we have to find ways of getting over, you know, ideological differences, political differences, and I'm talking about on the left. I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, the people who took over the Capitol, easy as it, you know, as much as that important as that is, but we need to get our own act together. We, you know, whoever we are. progressives, liberals, radicals, revolutionaries. You know, can we even put all those in this, under the same umbrella? I don't know. But it's now or never, folks. So, okay, I've said my piece. Sorry about the last caller. Won't be able to get you on because we are out of time. Again, Medea Benjamin will be coming on November 16th, the First Unitarian Church. I hope to have her on next month. A rally this Saturday at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue. Say no to U.S. wars. Sunday, October 16th at noon. That's it. I got to go. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. I'm out of here.
Oh, you're slick. You investors in hate. You Saddams and you Bushes. You Bin Ladens and snakes. You billionaire bullies. You're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse. And that's how it's done. War after war.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Next up is Flashpoints. It's 9 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Higher Reasoning Reggae every Sunday morning at 3 a.m. Higher Reasoning Reggae is dedicated to bringing international reggae word and sound power to the massive airing early Sunday mornings at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Portland.